Hi there. You've made a whip-smart decision by choosing to listen to the Boiled Sports Podcast, also known as The Handsome Hour. In this episode, we're joined by Golden Black's Brian Newbert and Hammer and Rail's very own Travis Miller. It's 100 minutes that will change your life, or at least kill 100 minutes. It's the Boiled Sports Handsome Hour, and it begins now.
Welcome to the Boiled Sports Handsome Hour. This is Jay, joined by Boiler Dad, who is so excited for basketball season, he's out playing pickup
hoops. That's right.
On the night that we're recording the show. So you like to get a little sweaty before you talk about producing
sports. Warm. Kind of get warmed up.
Warmed up. You don't want to pull anything. I understand.
The thing is, at my age and at my weight, you get warmed up at about
a couple hours, right?
Well, you get, that's loosened up in a couple hours, but you get warm where you're at the point where you're sweating after, one layup in the layup line, if you've got that,
right.
So, yeah, right. It's good.
Well, just because it takes you a while to get a layup in.
That's right. That's right.
You get sweaty after 15 or 20 minutes of trying to make a layup.
Well, you played basketball with me in college. I was, back then, I was relatively quick and could handle the ball and was a good defender. Well, now I'm not quick and I can't jump and I can't handle the ball anymore and I could never shoot. So what do you do? What do you do?
Just kind of run around screaming.
Yeah, I do that. I still do scream.
Just like a mean yell, like you're blocking. And they're like, you're not blocking anyone. just yelling. So it's the Boiled Sports Handsome Hour. We are here. There's so much to talk about. We got OMG Black Helmets. We can talk about that tonight and talk a little bit about basketball starting in under 2 weeks, which is pretty exciting. I mean, way under 2 weeks to count exhibition games. Oh, everybody who's playing in an exhibition game, take a step forward. Not you, AJ. Anyway, and then we'll talk about the season starting next week. And but we have a great guest to bring on tonight, and this I'm proud of this because I think that this is a good guest for the Handsome Hour, because usually we have clowns like Drive Time Radio guys in Indianapolis, people like that, just small
potatoes. Nothing.
We got a guy from a bit within the Purdue family, and we're going to go ahead and try to bring him on right now. It's going to be Brian Newbert from Golden Black Illustrated, and I'm going to try to add Brian right now. All right. So we're joined by Brian Newbert of Golden Black. And if you're not following Brian, you need to follow him on Twitter at Golden Black. Well, Brian, you could tell us which one. You now have a personal Twitter account, and you have the official one. So the personal one is all where you do all your swearing and nonsense.
our flagship goldenblack.com account is at goldenblack.com because Twitter won't let us have a decimal point. My personal account is just the ultra creative at Brian Newbert.
Well, you've made it. I have to say, you've made it when you can just use your real name and people follow it. That's kind of your name carries a lot of weight in West Lafayette circles. I know that makes you
when
proud.
I get the blue check mark, my whole life will have been worth it. That's all I want, the blue check mark. Robbie Hump won a couple of months ago. I want mine.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Is that based on followers? Do you guys know, or what is it?
I think Twitter decides it, right, Brian? Don't they just
I think I heard, and this might be Twitter rumor, so take it for what it's worth. But I think Twitter's got somebody assigned to just kind of going around and looking for people, and then kind of legitimizing them. So if there's an athlete, for example,
right,
this person or this agency, whoever it would be at Twitter, goes and looks into it and then just randomly assigns a blue check mark. So I think we all probably have a pretty long way to go until that person finds us and gives us.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting impersonated. I think that's kind of one of the big things, right? I mean, if someone is impersonating you or creating a false account, like a Like, for example, if someone created a fake Danny
Maybe,
Hope account
yeah,
or something.
Just to throw you know, stuff right
hypothetically.
Out.
Hopeful Danny, you mean?
Yeah, just as a phrase.
Yeah, just grab that one out of the air.
So, there's so many things we could talk about. We know we pay you by the minute here, so we have to make sure that we use our time wisely. I know you were on, I'm assuming it was you that was tweeting out everything from the Big Ten, the coaches call today. And I know that one of the things our listeners are excited about and the players are excited about, of course, are the black helmets. And of course, Purdue just dropped that on everybody. Did you have any idea that that was coming before Purdue sent that out?
I think Stacy, who does a lot of our football stuff, I think she probably had a pretty good idea it was happening. I don't know if she really knew when it was happening or anything like that, but we have been like everybody else where, you know, you've heard the rumors and whatnot. Daryl Hazel's big into appearance and he's big into like special occasion type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, very big into presentation. You know, he obviously wants everything around his program to be very professional, to look good, to be sleek, to be cool, so to speak. And I think that's important.
Yep.
Important for Purdue, you know, because obviously this is a program right now where it is that's, you know, first thing it's got to do is before it gains some traction, it's kind of gain some credibility. And you always, in recruiting, you always want to be cool, you know, for lack of a better term. You want some buzz about you. So if high school kids out there think your office looks cool, or if your uniforms look cool, or if they think they come to Purdue, they get to wear black helmets, and that's completely awesome, then high school kids are going to like Purdue. Yeah. Recruits are like fish, you know. They're really attracted to shiny things. What you want to do is you want to load up on as many shiny as possible.
Yeah. So ironically, Matt Black is a shiny thing.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah. That's weird how that works out. So, do you think I got? And maybe maybe you've heard this from Stacy, or maybe you don't know. I have any other further info than anyone else? But because they've kept it pretty quiet, I have to say they did a good job of. You know, they talked about how this was planned since July. I mean, I know that it didn't get out really. I know you heard things, but it wasn't really out broadly, I don't think at all. But I guess what I was going to ask is, do you think that it's more – we're sort of hoping that it's more than just the helmets, that the uniforms, whether it's permanent or not, that maybe there's an alternate look or an alternate design to the jerseys too. Do you think that's possible?
For Saturday, I have no idea. I do know whatever Purdue does with its uniforms pretty much has to be controlled by Nike. It's kind of more their call as much as anything. Mm-hmm. Purdue, I know, can tell Nike, we would like to do something, we would like to do this, we would like to do that. Nike has to approve, and Nike has to be willing to do it. I think sometimes in the conversation about uniforms, I think sometimes that gets lost on a lot of people. And, a lot of people think Purdue can just decide on Monday they want to do something with their uniforms and be wearing them on Saturday. But a lot more goes into it than that.
Right.
Well, do you know, I mean, is there anything, I know this is probably something that no one knows the answer on this call, but, you know, Ohio State's been wearing those alternate helmets and uniforms. I wonder if they've got that on the docket for this week, too, because, I mean, Nike tends to orchestrate that where two teams are wearing alternates, you know, just for, you know, to bring attention themselves. I wonder if that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I would think Nike would do that sort of thing with Ohio State for a quote-unquote showcase game.
Sure.
I'm entirely sure that this wouldn't qualify being a noon start, you know,
right.
Big Ten Network against the 1-6 team. You know?
Yeah, that might be kind of tough. No, you know, talking about a 1-6 team, I guess, and then we do want to talk to you a little bit about basketball too, but I mean, as far as the football team goes, just to put it bluntly, what's your take on their chances at getting better this year and not just getting better where Hazel sees them getting better? Do you think they can win another game this year, and do you think they will win another game?
I wouldn't write them off. I think they've got the right guy coaching. I think they've got the right coaching staff still. I know the results haven't been what anyone wanted them to be, obviously. You expected to see a little more early, I don't want to say maybe early success, but early competitiveness. It's just the first month of the season, the way they looked, was just I don't think anybody could have expected that.
Right.
I think the schedule has a lot to do with it. You know, I said from the start of the season, I don't think Purdue has been good enough to beat a lot of good teams yet, obviously. But I don't think they have been put in a position to by the schedule, and it's not like that's anybody's doing. It's just you have to play who you know, who the schedule says you have to play.
Yeah.
But to date, you know, in a season when you're a quote-unquote MAC cupcake as a team coming off the BCS from last year, and your one non-conference game that's not that MAC opponent, that FCS opponent, or Notre Dame is a road game at a team that won 10 games a year ago, that's a pretty hard schedule. And that was a schedule that when we were talking about, you know, some of the last coaching staff, we were wondering if that was going to scare off candidates, just because it's so important to have success early to a lot of these guys when they're considering making moves, that this schedule just did not set pretty well. You know, factor in the fact now that you're playing so many young players on offense, and obviously Purdue struggled for a long time on defense, that it's just, when you add it all together, you know, I guess you get 1-6, but when you're moving forward now, the schedule, I'm not saying it's soft from here on out by any means, but it softens up a little bit once you get to this Ohio State game. You still have Iowa. You still have Illinois. You have to figure those are teams Purdue at the very least can compete with. You still get to play Indiana, which obviously is better and has a pretty explosive offense, but you have to figure Purdue with some strides here the next couple of weeks should be able to at least compete with those teams.
So how about this question? Is there any reason to believe that there's – just because, I mean, we've talked about this on our side a couple of times, the historic nature of the type of losses. You know, having this many 30-point losses is pretty rare error. It's not a good thing for the program, not a good thing really. I know a loss is a loss, but the feeling of the loss at the end of the day has been just, I mean – it's like getting hit in the gut, and we saw it so many times last season, of course. So probably that being on the coattails of that doesn't make us feel any better. But there's no reason to believe that there's anything bigger going on in the program. Is there like a, you know, something where there's a chemistry, or, you know, upperclassmen aren't buying in or anything like that? Obviously, you know, that Hazel is playing a lot of young guys, but is there any thought on that this is more than just growing pains and trying to get used to a scheme and a system?
If you ask me, I think had a change not been made last season, the record would be identical. I think this is just sort of the hand Darryl Hazel's been dealt. Obviously, it's something he signed up for, so it's not like he's the victim here. But I think the roster is just 1-6. You know, I think this is just what Purdue is right now, and I think a lot of us who are around the team pretty regularly saw this coming. If we necessarily communicated that to people in advance, but there's obviously a reason Purdue has a new coach, and that's not just past results, but it's also what people foresaw coming. Now, had Purdue not – it was obviously an easy question to ask early in the season. Had the change not been made, would Purdue be in the same position it's in? Record-wise, I think so. Now, if you know, the past staff remained, perhaps continuity alone would have bought you – at least a little bit of collateral, maybe from an offensive standpoint, perhaps from just a systematic standpoint in general. So perhaps right away you could have been a little more competitive than you were, but I certainly don't think that this would be a, you know, this would be a 4-2 football team right now had the had they not made a coaching change or anything like that.
So you know, that makes me identical. That kind of just brings me to, you know, a lot of people have commented on our site and elsewhere we've seen it too. And there seems to be some debate back and forth where people are – and I'm not asking you to, like, necessarily point fingers or anything. But people have said, oh, well, you know, this is more or less what you're saying, but they're attributing it to Danny Hope leaving the cupboard bare is what they keep saying. You know, there's a certain faction that says, oh, Danny Hope just left the cupboard bare. He did a terrible job, and that's what Purdue's left with. And along the way, we always kind of felt that he didn't do a terrible job recruiting. I mean, some of the guys didn't pan out, but they all looked like they had talent and then just maybe weren't developed. So we always kind of felt like he wasn't a great coach, he wasn't a great developer, but he was a good recruiter. What's your kind of response to that? Do you think that he did leave the cupboard sort of bare? Is that what you're kind of getting at? Or do you think it's just a combination of the schedule and just young guys?
I think Purdue has good football players. I don't think it has enough of them. I think depth is a huge issue. When you look across the board, there's obviously some spots where they're just really struggling, and that's obviously a personnel issue. Now, a guy can be a good recruiter. He can get good recruits, but when you don't get recruits, when there are areas of your football team that are a little bit deficient, that speaks to talent. And the one spot right now that I think is kind of glaring is the offensive line a little bit. When he first
Yeah.
When he first took the job, I don't know if you guys remember that first class, he kind of went all in on recruiting what he called line prospects. You know, he recruited all those defensive linemen, hoping they could all grow into productive offensive linemen. Some moved right away, some moved 2 years later, some moved 3 years later, some moved 4 years later, and a bunch of those guys are starting right now. And, you know, the offensive line has kind of been a weak spot. You know, it's so hard, too, to fault the job the last coaching staff did offensively, because they never had normalcy at quarterback. Never once. In any year Danny Hope coached at Purdue did he have normalcy at quarterback. The first year they started Joey Elliott, who was one of their most productive quarterbacks under Danny Hope. Justin Sillerach, I think, was going to be their starter, and they lost him. And then after that, it was Rob Henry gets hurt, Robert Mark gets hurt, Robert Mark gets hurt again. And mm-hmm. He never had the same quarterback, you know, from season to season. And had that been the case earlier in his tenure, I mean, I can't predict what would have happened, but, you know,
sure.
Perhaps things would have looked a little bit better than they were, but Purdue's program is much healthier now from kind of the grassroots level than it was before. It just seems like something that's probably going to take a little bit of time to come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we don't obviously want to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, Danny Hope's early years and what ifs, but, you know, we've often said if that first year in 2009, if the Notre Dame and Oregon games that were that close, right, that were a play away in both cases pretty much, if those go the other way, who knows what happens? I mean, who knows what happens with him? You know, he's got two more wins that first year. He's at the least, he's 7-5 there, and that just – he's off to a, you know, such a different start that you really wonder what that does. And so when people talk about, you know, the near misses and the injuries and this and that, and then we've said to people sometimes, well, hey, you realize that means he'd probably still be their coach, right? You know, if they hold on against Ohio State last year,
yeah,
you know, or Notre Dame or both or something like that, then, you know, he may still very well be the coach, and then you don't have Darrell Hazel, and then you don't, you know, you're kind of just that close to a middling team again. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is, and it worked out. We tend to agree with you we definitely agree that they have the right guy there now.
Yeah. That was a bowl team in 2009. They just didn't go to a bowl.
That was
absolutely good enough to go to the postseason. They lost a lot of games. They probably shouldn't have lost a lot of close games. You remember the Oregon game, how close that was. I'm not faulting them for losing at Oregon. Everybody would lose.
Right.
Sure.
Right
now.
Sure.
But that was such a close game, and then they lose to North Illinois the next week, and then I think that was the year they lost to Northwestern in sort of bizarre fashion. They got clocked at Minnesota, which is something I use this example with the basketball team last year. If they win a couple of those games early, maybe the whole season's different.
Yep.
If Purdue football in 2009 wins one of those non-conference games early, perhaps they don't get blown out at Minnesota. Perhaps a couple other games go the other way. You know, so really, 2009 was the year I thought that last coaching staff had to sort of convince the fan base why things were moving in the right direction, and it just kind of went sideways on them.
Right. Well, I mean, that 2009 team was much better than the last year's team, and last year's team was in a bowl. You know, it's exactly what you're speaking to. The schedule did them no favors that year, and obviously last year it was soft, and they showed, I mean, even with all the, you know, the coaching changes and everything, I mean, they showed that they were, they just didn't belong in the postseason. And I'm one of these people that has never liked the fact that 6-6 teams go to bowls anyway, so... That was just kind of a selling of that idea that 6-6 teams, Purdue at 6-6, didn't belong in a bowl, and a lot of those teams don't belong.
Well, 6-6 going to a bowl and then bumping up like two slots because of the teams that weren't eligible.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of killed it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's something you said earlier that I want to revisit before we go into basketball real quickly, and you talked about the whole coaching staff being the right staff for the job. And of course, I think, I think people that have ears to hear will hear Shoup's name being in that group. And Chicago Bears fans just absolutely can't stand the guy. And I got to tell you, initially we were very fair and we said, let's give the guy a chance to show something. But the offense hadn't shown much yet. You like Shoup there? Do you think he's the right guy for the job on the offensive side?
I think I don't think you should ever judge a coach or an entire staff based off of one season. I think the most important thing Purdue had to do offensively to get the whole operation up and running was run the football. And when we were talking about recruiting earlier, the one spot I kind of mentioned was the offensive line, where they've been kind of deficient.
Mm-hmm.
And had Purdue been able to run the football, I think that was the one component they really needed to lay in place before everything else could fall into place.
Right.
And I just don't think they have the personnel to be that power running team they want to be. Now, you can always say, well, the coach has to adjust to the talent he has.
Yeah.
Which you're absolutely right. He does. With Rob Henry at quarterback early, there's a lot of things you can't question about Rob Henry. He's a great leader. He's a great athlete. He's a damn good kid. I will tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fit in the West Coast style offense, I just don't know about. I don't think I'm going out on a limb saying that. I think a lot of people would agree with me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When they went to Danny Etling, obviously they sort of recalibrated what they were doing from a strategic standpoint. But now you're in a position where you have a deficient offensive line. You're struggling to run the football, as you have all season. You're playing freshman at wide receiver, and now you're playing a true freshman quarterback. So when you're playing mm-hmm. at Michigan State, what sort of chance does that sort of personnel, collection of personnel really have? Because from a physical standpoint, they're probably going to get beat at every position across the field. And then from an experience standpoint, you're going to make mistakes. When you make mistakes, you turn the ball over. When you turn the ball over, it's really, really hard to win. And you give up points. You know, Purdue's played 7 games this year, and they've given up points on offense,
right?
5 of them. And you can't win football games that way. You know, you just can't. I don't care what system you're running.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I think you're going to have you're gonna have a lot of people very angry at you for that one. So get ready for that. So it could be normal for you anyway. Well, let's move on to basketball. I think the interesting thing, we have a good friend who's a Purdue grad, and he's down in Houston, and with all the good vibes coming out of the campus, coming on the coattails of the scrimmage on the weekend. You know, I think everybody was feeling pretty good about what they saw and how everything feels. It sounds like things have turned a corner. And he sends me a text right after the announcement of Hammond's suspension. He says, can we not have good news for more than 2 days in West Lafayette? What the hell is wrong with us? So, I mean, I just read some things that you guys had posted on Twitter about, you know, Ronnie Johnson, you know, responding to the suspension and saying, you know, he gets it. He's not going to let us down again, that sort of thing. That's good to hear. But what's, does it feel as positive as it seems to us? You know, we're not as close to the action as you are. How does it feel around the basketball program right now?
It's obviously not ideal. Obviously not a good situation. You don't want this to ever happen, especially right before the season. But
sure.
I wouldn't draw too much. You know, I wouldn't, you know, assassinate a kid's character over something like this happening. You know, we're all young. We all did stupid things. Whatever it was he did, we just weren't under the microscope like these guys. Now, if something like this happens once, okay. If it happens a bunch of other times, that's when you start to have a problem. And the problem Purdue had with a certain guy who shall not be named before, a couple of years ago, he kept doing it over and over and over again.
Right.
It becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. I would suspect you won't hear word one ever again about A.J. Hammonds getting in any trouble. I think he's a good kid. I think he has a good heart. Mm-hmm. I think he's smart. And I think he understands sort of the position he's in, where obviously he's a very important part of what could be a good team this year. And he has a very promising future. Let's not forget about that either.
Oh, yeah.
He's smart enough to understand that. I think the people around him are astute enough to understand that. And I would be surprised if we ever heard of any sort of issue like this again. And as Matt Painter talked about the other day, and I don't want to bog down in coach speak, and I hate being the guy who just repeats what the coaches say,
mm-hmm.
but it is conceivable that these sorts of things turn out for the better in the long run. Keaton Grant, when he was a freshman, I remember he and Terrence Crump getting suspended in Vegas. And from that point on, Keaton Grant, at least from a public standpoint, was a model citizen from there on out, and a really good player for Purdue and a great substance guy.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of rambling now, but I would
you're good.
I would expect to not hear anything about something like this again with A.J. Hammonds. And, you know, he'll go on to have a good year and go on to have a good career.
Yep. So let me ask you a question. We had another member of the real media on the show a couple weeks ago, and I asked him this question. I'll ask you the same question. So if I give you a blank, as blank goes, so will go Purdue. So as one player, or you can say a group of players, but who's that guy that their success is going to define the team's success this year, or is it not that simple for you?
I don't think there's any one guy. You know, they have so many good players now, and I don't say that to make them sound like Kentucky, where they've got 10 lottery picks on their team.
Right, right.
But I just think
seven.
The importance factor is so decentralized now.
Yeah.
Where part of the issue with Hammonds last year was they just needed so much from him so quickly, and he just wasn't mature enough to handle it right away. And the same can be said for Ronnie Johnson. They had to have him on the floor because they didn't have another good option at point guard. And if he made mistakes three possessions in a row, guess what? You just have to eat it because you don't have an option. If A.J. Hammonds doesn't show up for a game mentally, guess what? You just have to eat it because you don't really have a better option. Because he was so important to what they did at both ends of the floor. This year, you've got two talented bigs. You've got two point guards who can really score and really break people down off the dribble. And you have guys who can make jump shots. You have functional jump shooters. And you should have enough depth and athleticism and whatnot to be able to actually defend. And you should be smart enough and experienced now where you don't turn the ball over left and right. Yeah. But if I had to pinpoint any one guy, I would say it's a combination of Hammonds and Jay Simpson, just because those guys' personalities are such where you just need those guys to show up every game. You need, or at least you need one or the other to show up every game, because it's such a luxury to have two talented big men, two guys as skilled as those guys, with actual, honest to God, Big Ten bodies, you know, who should be able to really do some damage down low.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to have productivity out of at least one of those guys every single night. So just because of those guys' personalities, where they're still kind of wild cards a little bit in terms of their motors, and so on and so forth, those are the two guys I would probably pinpoint if I can top out and take two.
Well, their games are vastly different though too. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, is to you one of the big advantages that they are so different in their skill set, because Hammonds is such a back to the basket, big, strong guy. Is that an advantage? I mean, because it'll give teams multiple looks, and they'll have to figure out how to defend that change. Or because the thing that's interesting to me is we really haven't, as fans who haven't been around, we haven't really seen everything that Hammonds is capable of either. I mean, that's the one thing you've been talking about him and his tremendous potential for months, and I'm excited to see that, and I still haven't seen a whole bunch of evidence of that, if you will, you know?
Yeah. He can really shoot the ball. I don't know if that's something people really got to see this year, and I don't know if it's a deal for Purdue for their center to be hanging around the three-point line shooting three-pointers. This obviously isn't Bill Carbon in Northwestern here.
Sure.
But I think that's something he can do. I think he can make open jumpers. I think he's got great feet. He's got great hands. I think he has a lot of skill to him. I don't know if people have really seen the skill yet. I thought you saw it in bursts last year, but I just think, you know, first off, you want him to be really good around the basket. I think Simpson is the one who has, you know, honest to God skill that it's going to be evident to everybody in games he shows up in.
Yeah.
He also can be every bit the low post guy A.J. Hammonds is. He just isn't as big. So I don't know if he's going to overpower people from a physical standpoint. But his post game is a little bit – I'd say it's probably a little bit more refined than Hammonds. He just doesn't have the size. Mm-hmm. What Simpson has to do is he can't settle for jump shots. You know, what you saw Saturday morning,
yeah,
I thought, was he made his first jumper, and then he kind of settled for jump shots from there on out. He gets a little bit tired, and he settles for jump shots. He is so skilled. What I think he needs to do is he needs to attack in the post. When he gets the ball in the wing, he needs to attack off the dribble, which he can very much do. He honestly, from an offensive perspective, has every tool possible. I think he'll be a huge weapon for Purdue too when they play against zones, because he can be really good at squaring up an opposing center when he catches the ball kind of in the high post around the free throw line, putting the ball on the floor or passing inside out, because he's so good about that stuff. I don't know if people have seen it yet, haven't had an opportunity to because he hasn't really played, but I think that's something fans are going to see this year in flashes. What Simpson has to do is he has to turn flashes into consistent productivity.
Well, so how about this question? You know, this is something that everybody's talked about and alluded to with Bryson Scott's intensity and the fact that he showed a lot. You know, I mean, I saw him play in high school a couple times, and I knew he was going to be intense. And I saw him in the All-Star game weekend where he looked like he was angry at everybody, you know, he was playing. But he showed a little bit of that, I think, during that scrimmage, and I think that's just kind of the way he is. I mean, is the lineup going to be, you know, Ronnie and Bryson right from the get-go, do you think?
I think I don't know who's going to start a point guard tomorrow night. I honestly don't. I think that is as of today, I think that was still up for debate or up to be decided. I think you will see them play a little bit together at times. I don't think Purdue's going to start that way. But I think the best thing Bryson Scott – I shouldn't say the best thing, but one of the really good things he's brought to this team is he's pushed Ronnie Johnson. I mean, you know, as I mentioned before, Ronnie Johnson had to play for Purdue last year because they didn't have another option. So he needed – I mean, again, I'm repeating what Painter said all last year, was he needed to come out of games at times, and your option was to – put him on the bench and put in Anthony Johnson at the point. And that was a bad fit. It was just a bad fit. And so now not only does Purdue have a legitimate guy behind Ronnie Johnson, but he's got a guy pushing Ronnie Johnson to practice as far as Ronnie Johnson's ever been pushed before in his life. Everything Bryson Scott does, he does with every ounce of his being. Better and worse. I mean, every single play he makes – or every single play he's involved in is the single most important play of his life.
Right, right.
That's how he plays. And when things don't go his way sometimes he goes a little bit sideways. But
sure.
I think, you know, he's had a lot of success so far. He just has to understand that, you know, he's going to be a productive player for Purdue. He's going to get opportunities this year. But when things don't go his way, things get better. You know, he is a freshman. He is going to make mistakes. He just has to be patient with himself. He's so hard on himself sometimes because he expects so much of himself and he's so competitive, you know, sometimes it gets the best of him a little bit. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing for a kid to be too competitive. But I think sometimes it can be a bad thing for a kid to be too hard on himself when things don't go his way.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the single biggest, factor for Bryson Scott's success this year, how he handles adversity. I mean, that's just like the whole team. Because he's so used to being so good at everything and so dominant. He's going to be a really good basketball player for Purdue. He just needs to be patient.
Yep.
And, I mean, well, I was just going to say, isn't that – you could say the same about Ronnie Johnson. I mean, it felt like last year he was so used to being so good, and he struggled, as you said earlier. But I think, we saw progress, and it felt like – and I think you alluded to this earlier too. You know, he had to play a lot of minutes last year, and that was – you know, at times it was like, well, just gotta learn. But I remember thinking one thing that I took away from last year, I think when I was grasping for things to be excited about, was that's a great thing. Like, this is a guy who's got so many minutes now. He's got D1, Big Ten minutes, and a lot of them. He was averaging 30 plus a night. I think that can only be a good thing for him, as far as, you know, and I know you talked a little bit about this earlier, but I mean, we should see a pretty significant step forward from guys like him, just like we've talked about with Hammonds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think experience goes a long way. I call it the Kirk Kittner factor, where no matter how average a player you are, the more you play early in your career, you have a chance to be pretty good at the end of your career.
Right.
I don't know if you guys remember Kirk Kittner.
Illinois
quarterback. Maybe the worst team I've ever seen in the Big Ten in '97 in Illinois. Yeah. And by his senior year, he had them in the Fiesta Bowl or something like that.
Right.
Sugar Bowl, actually. But no, I think experience alone should make Ronnie Johnson just profoundly better. I think he's going to understand shot selection. I think he's going to be more aware of his surroundings and the players he's playing with. You know, something about last year's team is they shot the ball unbelievably poorly. by Purdue by anybody's standards. Mm-hmm. A big part of that is guys not getting the sort of shots they can make. DJ Bird was a great shooter as a junior, didn't have the best senior year. He didn't just forget how to shoot. You know, all of a sudden he's not playing with Lewis Jackson. He's not playing with Robbie Hummel. He's not getting the ball where he wants the ball. He's not, you know, the offense isn't flowing.
Right. And he's getting he's getting the best defender on the court.
Oh, right. He was a sixth man when those guys were there. Now he's a top option.
But, when the point guard penetrates, Lewis Jackson always knew where DJ Bird was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Got him the ball where he could get the sort of shots he wanted. Last year, Ronnie Johnson's driving lane. DJ Bird's standing there waving his arms, and Ronnie Johnson's got tunnel vision to the basket. That's going to go – that alone is going to make him a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's going to understand – I mean, I mentioned shot selection earlier. But, you know, he jacked a lot of bad jumpers last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'll still take a couple wild cards every now and then. I think he'll turn the ball over a little bit again. But I don't think it's going to be near as pressing a concern as it was last year.
Hey, Brian, I know we've taken a lot of your time already. I wanted to ask you a little something away from the basketball venue, because one thing that I think you do a lot that Jay and I appreciate is you make a lot of movie references and TV references and pop culture references. You seem to have a pretty good memory on that stuff, kind of encyclopedic recall of things. So what's the greatest movie ever, and what's your favorite movie quote?
You know, my opinions on my favorite movie ever change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I see The Usual Suspects, I can't help but think it's the best movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That said, I could watch the movie Get Shorty every single day. I could watch that movie every single day, I'm telling you.
That one's off the beaten path, too. It's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one, And the good cameo, not cameos, but some of the roles that are in it are kind of underrated. Just Gandolfini's in it,
There's a movie called Singles. I don't know if you guys ever saw Singles.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I remember that.
I could watch that all the time.
We're dating ourselves really bad. That's the problem. All of us are.
Yeah, nobody knows what these shows.
Here's the thing. You don't know this, Brian, but there are a lot of co-eds that listen to this show. They gather around their internet radios and. They have an idea in the head of what we look like, you know. We're hurting that, you know, young, strapping, you know, image that we've got. But anyway, they have no idea what we're talking about.
Every now and then I will call somebody Mr. Sensitive Ponytail Man, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. Singles. Then there's all sorts of other comedies, you know, obviously Caddyshack, Animal House.
Yeah, yeah.
You watched 100 times in college that could probably recite.
Right. Did you live in the dorms at Purdue?
I lived in Wiley Hall my freshman year, and then I moved out myself.
Okay, so you didn't really get to ingest the genius that was Boiler TV then. That was the same, you know, seeing True Lies, you know, what, 150 times a month?
True Lies, that was like the first year of Boiler TV. And I think it was my freshman year, your sophomore year. And if Brian might have been a year behind me. And so it was the first year they had, and there was no TV. There was just movies on at like 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. There was, you know, there was no programming in between. But it was, hey, a movie for free? Right. This is amazing. Right. You know, we didn't have your stinking Netflix, kid.
Right. You didn't even have to put a VHS tape into the.
Right.
The only movie I remember watching on Boiler TV as a freshman was About Last Night. For some reason, that's the only movie I remember seeing.
I don't remember that.
I don't either.
On your
I don't either.
Movies, or on his list of the best movies.
And that wasn't.
Well, that's it was a great network, and it was way ahead of its time just to have, you know, all that dead air and then have, you know, the same movie.
And then a movie would just start. It would be great. I remember actually skipping a class to see a movie I'd seen 10 times because I'm like, well, it's coming on at 4 and I have a 4:30.
Thank God.
Well, you really, I mean, at that point, you just remember how you'd look for any reason to not go to class if you were predisposed to skipping class like I am. And So, you know, one thing about before we totally just bail on basketball, I do want to hear just because it's just fun to throw the, you know, you have to do this as part of your job. And so we're going to just throw out there what and you don't have to be this precise, but ballpark for us, what kind of season is it fair for Purdue fans to expect this season? I mean, tournament team, I think without a doubt you have to say that that's what you should expect as a fan, right?
I would expect them to play in the NCAA tournament. I've been pretty bullish on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're better. I mean, I think they're – all you have to do is look at them, and they just look right. like a different basketball team. And then when you just look at the schedule, I mean, mm-hmm. that team last year, as bad as it was in so many phases of the game, you know, they couldn't shoot, they couldn't defend. They couldn't turn the ball over, or they could turn the ball over, but they couldn't turn opponents over.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They won 8 games in the best conference in college basketball.
And a loaded conference at that. That was the thing. It was even a raised one for
such a great point, yeah. too, because they finished 6 games out.
Yeah. As I just wrote in my column for, I think, our basketball yearbook that comes out at some point in the next 48 hours or something like that, if they have Tyrone Johnson in the first game, they probably beat Bucknell. If they don't get called for that elbow, they probably beat Villanova.
Oh, definitely.
Probably, because there were still 45 seconds left, and it had taken Villanova about 45 seconds to score about 12 points, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So there's no guarantee Purdue wins that Villanova game, even without the elbow. If they beat Villanova, I guarantee you they show up in the first half against Oregon State, might win that game too. Mm-hmm. If they win that game, maybe they beat Xavier at home. They sure as hell beat Eastern Michigan.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you go from 6-6 in non-conference to at worst 10-something else. The only team that beat them in every sense of the term in non-conference last year was Notre Dame. And if you have 10 non-conference wins going into Big Ten last year, maybe you have some momentum. Perhaps your young players have experienced winning. They understand things a little bit better, and perhaps things turn out a little bit different. If you have 10 non-conference wins and you win one more Big Ten game, you're a 9-9 team in the Big Ten, and you're in the NCAA tournament. So Purdue, as bad as it was last year, wasn't that far off. It seemed like they were the worst team ever by standards, just from the sheer eyeball test because of all the things they did poorly.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, if just a couple of things go differently for them, the entire season is different. Now Purdue has a better basketball team. It's got better players and more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And schedule. You have a couple wins right out of the gate, probably. You're kind of set up for that early success last year's team needed. You have a non-conference schedule that's not easy by any means, with Oklahoma State, potentially Memphis. Boston College is no cupcake, but you should come out of it with double-digit wins.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into the Big Ten. You don't play at Michigan State. You don't play at Indiana. The Big Ten's not as strong as it was last year. I know we say that every year and we end up wrong, but I just don't see any way around them winning 20 games.
Yeah.
At least 20 games. And if you win 20 games, you should be in the NCAA tournament.
Yep. Yep.
You won't be in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. So is that 20 games, is that your prediction? Is that, do you do that type of thing, or do you not really do that type of thing?
For our basketball yearbook, I think I gave them 23 or 24, something like that. And then I know I kind of look at that. I'm like, man, that team last year winning 24 games, really? But then I go watch them practice. I go watch them scrimmage. And I think they should be so much better. And I'm kind of sticking my neck out here because I don't like to be this emphatic about preseason stuff, mm-hmm. especially as much as they have to prove from last year, just the way they play basketball. But they just look like an entirely different team. They look better. They got a schedule that sets them up for success. They always win their first round NCAA tournament game. If they can just defend, I think they're going to be a lot better than people think they are. I know there's no expectations from the outside, but Purdue didn't earn any expectations from the outside last year. They squandered the benefit of the doubt they had coming by the way they played last year.
Yeah,
but I think this is entirely different this year.
Well, good stuff. I appreciate you coming on, Brian. And could we maybe set this up to do it again sometime midway through the basketball season or something, just to hear what you have to say at that point, and talk about how smart you were, before the season.
If I'm correct, then I'm all for it. If I'm wrong, then you guys will have to call my agent.
All right. You got it. Well, we appreciate it. And we've changed the format a little bit on this. So we, like Jay said, we'll, you know, we used to do a call-in show and it got really long. And I think this is better. We cut right to the juicy part of the steak and we get big time, you know, guests and people that are in the know. And you're one of them. And we really appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot for coming.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me and happy Black Helmet Day.
Oh, you too.
Thank you. Thank you. We didn't get you any. All right, yeah, Brian. Thank you.
Horrible. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, all Brian. Right.
Okay.
Good stuff.
And just to make sure I didn't screw up our podcast. Oh, we still seem to be live and hot here. So yeah, no, that's really good stuff. And you know, he made a lot of great points. That you know, what's interesting is he's roughly our age, and he views things a lot of times like a fan still, which is one of the reasons that people, you should like him. You know, yeah. If you read Brian, he's good at what he does, but he's also a little more like you than you realize. He's not Jeff Washburn. He's not Mike Carmen, and nothing against those guys, but he's not
detached,
you know, and those guys like Purdue. Yeah. I mean, they do, they couldn't not, but he's like us in that he still has that, like, oh man, if just a few things went differently, you know, he's a realist, but he does say, hey, you know, things went poorly. Here are the breaks they missed out on, and here's what should have happened, without saying, you know, that I don't know. There's just a difference. You know, sometimes there's people who are just like, oh, we're this close to a national title. And he's not like that. All he's saying is, hey, a couple breaks here and there, and that's a team that's got 18, 19 wins rather than having 16. Right. You know, I mean, and he's not wrong. I mean, those are great points there. And even talking about the 09 football team, that was a really good way to put it. We've kind of said that without being that articulate. You know, he said that was a bowl team that didn't go to a bowl. And that's a great point. Like, they beat some good teams that year and played tough against some good teams. And they just, you know, that's a really good way to sum it up. So I like his optimism. I like the fact that he feels like, I don't know if it kind of struck you. I mean, his response about the football team being the absolute right coach and right staff and right mindset.
A lot of confidence in the stats, you know?
I exactly, you know, and this is a guy that I tend to I lend more than the average fan, because he's there, he sees it, he lives it, and if it was dreadful, which he didn't say this, but you could sort of read that Danny Hope era was circling the drain, and you know, before maybe any of us even thought it, like, you know, he just said they had to change. It was you know, heading in the wrong direction. So for that guy to be, you know, for him to be feeling the way he is still about football, he still sounded enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when it's your job, it's hard to always be enthusiastic. So to still feel that way, I think, I don't know, it makes me feel good that there's optimism about, and really at this point, let's just be honest, we need to know if there's optimism about 2014. Mm. And I think there's reason to have it, because there's no way the schedule can be as brutal.
Right. Well, that was good. I agree, and I, you know, you and I have talked about this a couple times. You know, we remind people often that we're not journalists, you know, and part of the reason we're not is because it's tough to keep that passion when you're doing it week in, week out. You know, we both had a little taste of that, whether it's, you know, going into the press box or covering something ad nauseum. You know, it gets hard, but that's
dating a football player.
Exactly.
Right,
that was tough for me. That was, but we don't. Let's not talk about that.
No, I don't want to get you all.
Yeah, exactly. It's. Those are tough memories, but anyway, you know, you keep your passion is the point, you know, that's neat to see that he's done that, and I appreciate him coming on. This is you've done a great job, you and you know, our show producer have both done a great job.
our showrunner, yeah, exactly. He's done a great job. The booker, yeah, no, we appreciate it. And we should see, again, I always notice this after our guests leave. I should promote them a little more while they're on, in case. But it's not a radio program, so no one's just diving in and listening from the middle, I don't think. But that was Brian Newbert of Golden Black Illustrated, or GBI, or goldenblack.com, whatever you want to call it. You can find him on Twitter at goldenblack.com. That's GoldenBlackCom, or at Brian Newbert on Twitter. And you should pick up the at the very least, you should pick up, I always say, the football and basketball previews, or yearbooks, depending on what they're mm-hmm. calling them. That football preview is so much fun to pick up in August, and just, you know, it's, you know, there's just, you know, just like we talk about how there's a hunger for Purdue coverage, and that's why people read our site and Travis's site and all that. To be able to pick up a magazine that's cover to cover Purdue football is fun. Yeah. Man, it's just even when things might be lean, it's just exciting to read
but
about.
But it's like, you know, so, we always talk about too, at that point in the summer, you're always like, oh, I just can't wait to read a little more to get, maybe you'll get some nugget that no one else is. It's almost like your season prep, you know, and to get that much information, it's good. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where, I don't know about you, but when I bought it, I read it different places. You know, start out at a kitchen table read, and then it ends up get to the bathroom eventually, and I'm still finding new stuff in it, man. It's great.
Exactly. I take mine to the, because of summertime and I live in Jersey, I'll take it. It'll be all like, you know, wet looking because I'll have it at the beach and it'll have like lotion on it and not that kind of lotion, the sunlight. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, I it's all dog eared and it looks like kids are going, dog eared? What the heck does that mean? Anyway, so anyway, our point is, good guy, read goldenblack.com if you have the chance. Follow him on Twitter. You'll get lots of good information. You'll see we retweet them a lot because they do churn out a lot of good tidbits and nuggets just because they're so close to the different programs. Get a lot of good quotes. So you should check them out.
And you know what they have too is the Purdue football Twitter feed follows them too. They like them.
So Purdue football is a
have you heard of that Twitter handle? It's
a Twitter feed. I actually can't. I don't get to really.
They won't let us look at them.
No, they don't let us talk to them, retweet them, or anything. We are blocked by Purdue football on Twitter. I just want to put that out there because it needs to be said. It should be said. And we've actually even contacted. What was that? The assistant SID, whatever the heck that guy was, who actually follows us on Twitter. I saw you wrote to him and said, hey. You know,
he's the basketball SID, right? That's his official title.
Oh, is he? Okay. Yeah. And you made a point of just
because he follows
out.
Us. He follows us. Yes. And I said, hey, you know, we appreciate it. We've gotten some shabby treatment from your counterpart in the football realm, and we really don't know why. I mean, I understand that we were pretty critical last year, but give me a break. Who wasn't? You know, and I guess the theory that it was. You know, Danny Hope's wife running that Twitter feed may still be true. I think that'd be odd. That'd be an odd move by the Purdue Athletic Department, but.
Oh, Tom Schott, why won't you let us
love
Oh, just
let
this
us love you, Tom.
You're such a warm guy.
Big teddy bear.
Oh, so speaking of warm guys, there's
That was a good segue. I thought you were going to do it earlier when you were talking about just pie in the sky fans. I thought that was your segue, and I was waiting for you to do that.
Well, I'm laying the ground.
I know. I love, you know, I love it.
The gentleman we want to bring on, he may be on the line already.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to help.
Hey, there he is.
Hey. So we were just talking about warm, handsome men.
And
we were really talking about Tom Schott. I know you probably won't want to comment on that, but fortunately this can all be edited later. So That's a double-edged sword for you, Travis. You can anything you say can be tweaked around a little bit, or it can be, you know, taken out to make us look better. So we're joined by the inimitable Travis Miller of Hammer and Rails, and really, I guess, what do we start with, Travis? OMG, black helmets.
Hey, I kind of like it. I think it's great as long as we don't follow up with the Fred Akers style of play that we had with the first black helmets.
That's a legitimate concern right now, isn't it?
Exactly. That's the problem, is that the last time they were worn, Purdue got their ass kicked all the time, and there's a better than average chance that's going to happen again. However, I want our audience to be very excited because Travis is here to tell us, and of course, if you read Travis' site, you already know that he's been drunk on some sort of hooch for 4 or 5 days. And what I love is that he started down this path. Like right after Ohio State got finished laying waste to Penn State, it wasn't like Ohio State tripped into their like they haven't looked this dominant in like 4 years.
Yeah.
And nope. I see a weakness.
Took them back.
I see
they
it.
Took Penn State back to the 1800s, boys.
Hey, if I'm gonna go, I'm gonna go all
go
in.
All
this.
In.
Yeah,
all in.
Go home, man. Yeah.
What have we got to lose at this point? Oh, darn. We might go to 1-7 and still be in last place in the Big Ten. How awful.
Yeah.
Hey, Northwestern's right there. Right? Northwestern's 0-4. Just wanted to point that out. And Travis, did you like my – come on. You were arguing with me when that happened, but I know it's not exactly the same, but tell me I'm wrong now. That game day for them was their – their Kyle Orton fumble moment.
I agree. I've been saying that apex. Since then. It's scarily.
It's their apex.
It's eerily similar to what happened to us, honestly.
Although Purdue still had heart after that and still won some games, Northwestern looks...
They look dead.
They just look dead. They're going to lose this week. I forget. Who the heck did they... They just lost to
Nebraska
Iowa.
Nebraska this week.
That'll be fun.
Nebraska's
pissed off because they just got beat down by Minnesota.
They have to beat Nebraska, Michigan, or Michigan State to have a chance at a bowl game now. After starting 4-0.
Amazing. And being ranked 16th, they might not go to a bowl game. And leading at 23-13 in the third quarter against Ohio State.
It's crazy.
It's amazing. That's why we watch. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it, as Chris Berman says. I love to quote Chris.
I know. You love everything he does, though. You're just a huge fan.
So, Travis, I want to know. I just want to cut right to the chase here. Or are you just being silly? What makes you think? How does Purdue win this game? Let's just put it that way.
Pretty much the fact that you've got 13 years of evidence now that Ohio State can't play in West Lafayette. I mean, they've brought in three or four different coaches. They've had highly rated teams. They've had bad teams. They have only 13 losses in Big Ten play on the road since 2000. Four of them have been in West Lafayette.
But, aren't you ignoring one really, really huge fact in that we are watching one of the worst Purdue football teams we've ever seen right now?
Purdue was 1-5.
We really couldn't say that about any of those other Purdue football teams. They weren't great, but they weren't like this. And this, I'll keep saying my disclaimer. I have to hit this thing over the head that yes, there's room for improvement. And yes, there's time they can get better. But what we've seen so far is just deplorable football.
Yeah, I'll agree. It's pretty bad. And this would be the most shocking one of those upsets. And as a caveat, I recognize it's very unlikely it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if it did, if you're an Ohio State fan, then you really have to start wondering what in the heck you have to do to play in West Lafayette. And they don't come back until 2018, and that's the next time we play them, period. So I just want to give them a little, going away president. Be like, yeah, you guys are great, but you were too stupid to self-sanction the year that you were 6-6 because you just had to go to that Gator Bowl and lose it, and it cost you an undefeated season last year. And then now that you're talking national title and, we got to blow out teams by so many points just to have a chance, well, why don't you just dick trip over yourselves when you come to West Lafayette? And then, we'll be like, yeah, okay, now you can go win the Big Ten again. Enjoy the Rose Bowl. Oh,
I think Travis just said the funniest thing he's ever said, by the way. I just think he said the funniest thing he's ever said. That was awesome.
I am tired of their arrogance. Yeah. I am tired of the Urban Meyer arrogance and that shot where he's just pointing out onto the field. We're so great under Urban Meyer. You know what? You've won exactly dick. You've won 20 games, but you've won no championships. Why? Again, because you were so arrogant that you had to go play in your Gator Bowl because the NCAA is never going to sanction us. Right. Well, I hope you enjoyed sitting at home last year as the only undefeated team in the country. Hope it was really worth it.
Well, what's interesting to me, you mentioned Urban Meyer. I think both of you guys would probably agree with this. Last year when they beat Purdue and he was freaking dancing.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
His Kenny Guy. He's never like that. I mean, it's because he flipping knew he got away with something, right? I mean, he knew they didn't deserve that game and that they – I mean,
and gosh, that's just another reason I think Purdue has a chance. Not a great one, but a chance. Because nobody expected them to be competitive last year at Ohio State. And how awful did Purdue look not only in the games before that but in the games after that? They looked terrible. Terrible. Yeah. I mean, we talk about the Nordfins. They couldn't do anything right.
Yep.
And then for one day, it all came together. And that's how, if Purdue is going to pull this upset off, it's going to be the same recipe that we've used in the last two wins in West Lafayette and how we were competitive last year.
Ryan Kerrigan.
I wish. Yeah. Well, Kerrigan was only president for one of those.
Well, Kerrigan was an absolute Superman, though. That second half of that game, gosh, that was silly.
Well, one of the what's funny is some of the pretty much every Ohio State blog and Twitter account. The funny thing, I'll give them some credit, is that they are actually afraid of
Purdue. Yeah, we'll give them credit on that. Most of their smarter fans are like, okay, you know, we're going to steer a wide berth because, you know, we
– Yeah, let's just – yeah. And their joking is like friendly teasing. They're like – It's like, ha,
they at least respect us.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because they don't understand what the hell happens when they play Purdue. And I think it's hilarious because it's like voodoo. Yeah. They don't understand it. And,
neither do we.
Right. Well, I had to share with you guys. I don't even know if Ryan saw this, but on Twitter, the Buckeye Battle Cry, they said something about Halloween. Oh,
This was funny.
And I said something like, oh, I still have a Kerrigan, whatever I said, Kerrigan using Pryor as a pinata in the back storeroom. Right. And he's like, oh, that's scary. I wonder what those guys are doing now. And I said, well, Kerrigan's still terrorizing quarterbacks and Pryor's still cashing checks.
I don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, he set it up for me. I was like, come on. I can say anything I want now. This is awesome. But they do. I do love the fact that there's a part of them that's just petrified because they know they should win. And this is one of those everything to lose games. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing to gain except you got to win by 50 or 60 to make it actually count.
The only way Purdue stays in the game is as they've done in the two wins and last year, the defensive line has got to transform into the strange monster that it becomes against Ohio State.
Right.
Where they get after – where it's the front four just getting after Pryor/Miller. And if you look historically over Miller's career, two of his worst games have been against Purdue.
Yep. And you know what? The thing that I actually see – I do see credence in that since that's Purdue's strongest part of the team. And they have shown that group, especially the revamp group with some of those freshmen being injected in there and some new guys starting. There's a chance that they could get in his face a little bit. But here's the thing, though. How many sacks have been registered by the front four this year?
Not a lot.
It's low. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I keep saying. I'm like, man, these guys can't put enough pressure on them. But help me out, Travis. You're better at this game than I am. The freshman that Razan Howard. There we go. Okay. That guy, I think he's a real difference maker. And that's something we barely know anything about him because he's, played a game and a half, really?
Mm-hmm.
So he could be an interesting one, and I think there's a similar problem that Miller has that Pryor had is that when you really make him pass to beat you, it's a bad thing for Ohio State.
You've got to get in his face and you got to hit him. You got to hit him repeatedly.
Yep.
Now the one thing that does scare me is Carlos Hyde's just playing like a freaking man right now.
That's the problem right there, I don't think Purdue. Can stop him at all. So
yeah, and they never really had that running back that could kind of take the pressure off of Pryor/Miller in those three games that we've inexplicably been close or beaten them. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know what we're gonna do to stop Hyde. Tell him a story. Bore him to death. Especially with Purdue's linebacking corps, because as good as the defensive line is, the linebacking. You know, they're great guys. They play hard. They're terrible football players. I'm sorry. We have not had a respectable linebacker since what? Nico Koutavidis?
Yeah. I think you got to go back in that area. And that's a sad 10
years.
Thing. Yeah. It's 10. That's the wild thing. I mean, it makes me feel old when you say things like that, because you're like, man, it doesn't seem like it's been that long. And then you're like, I guess we've all just kind of gotten used to that position sucking. You know, it's too bad because, like you said, there's a lot of good guys that have come there and played hard, but just not a lot of guys who are in the right position to succeed. I mean, gosh darn it. I still think Joe Holland got an unfair amount of crap as a player because he was asked to do way too much under Hope's system. You know, he was asked to do things that he probably shouldn't have been doing. But Holland was out of position a lot, we just kind of said, what are you going to do?
Will Lucas has been pretty good this year, but you can't be competitive in the Big Ten with one semi-respectable linebacker.
Right.
And I think the amazing thing is you've had three different coaches now and nobody's come to address it unless, you have Jalen Robinson come in next year with Drew Tranquil and they're as good as everybody's making him out to be.
Right. How about this? There's a good segue. What's your thoughts about Tranquil right now?
I don't like that Notre Dame is, you know, continuing to come after him hard, but I do like that he has not done an official decommitment. I kind of wish that we could lock him up here in the early signing period, coming up like we are with the basketball guys, but I think it's going to be a long wait till February, and I think also getting him would be key to getting his younger brother, who is pretty good football player in his own right, as a junior this year, because I've been tracking Drew and a lot of the same mentions. They're just both killing it for Carroll.
Yeah, the numbers they're putting up offensively are just ridiculous. It's like PlayStation football. Every week. And Jay, you're a little bit cut off from this. I know you listen to Travis's high school updates though on Twitter.
He knows I live for him.
Exactly. Those are the thing he looks for every week. And if you guys follow both of us on Twitter,
on Friday on the couch.
Just read about the high school football.
What's going on in Marion?
I love it. I love watching that back and forth. That's one of my favorite things, because I'm not on Twitter as much as you guys, and I love – that's one of my favorite things. I'll just tune in and watch what you two have said to each other. It's pretty fun, pretty good stuff. And for those of you who don't know, the Twitter handle is it Hammer and Rails? Is that right?
Yes, okay. It is.
Travis's Twitter handle is Hammer and Rails, and the website is the same, hammerandrails.com. He's a good guy, and he follows a lot of things that we don't. The recruiting thing, I think you do a good job following that, and it kills me, you know, watch it. I'm just like I can't do it, so I don't, and wait until they're signed, and because if I follow it, I end up crying and having a glass of Merlot and, you know, just curling up with a Danielle Steele novel and, you know, getting a bubble bath, and I have to do something just to calm me down. I feel so bad, you know, if I follow the recruiting that hard, because all it's been is disappointment, heartache for us, really. I mean, the thing that's amazing is I went back and as you guys might do or might not do, and you look at guys that almost chose Purdue or had them in their top three and things like that, and man, there are a lot of near misses that have been pretty great football players, you know, and that just I kind of wish I forgot their names and didn't even think about them. But when I see the highlights, I'm like, damn it, that guy had Purdue in his final three. So,
well, the one that bothers me is the guys that we did get that were, you know, the 4 and 5 star guys that didn't work out, you know, Selwyn Lyman and all that, you know. Kyle Williams is the only 5-star recruit we've ever gotten, and he went insane.
I mean, he was a very
Doug Van Dyke.
Yeah, very high four. So the kid at Michigan, though, isn't having a very good career, and he's probably buried now.
Bellamy?
Yeah.
Bellamy, yeah.
His knee's healed right now, isn't it?
I think so, yeah, but I haven't seen him. I don't know if he's played at all this year. I think he got some play one of the times that Denard Robinson was hurt, and so he's actually seen the field. But
that started a game or two in that period, actually.
I think you're right, yeah.
Oh, but I haven't checked recently. I'll do it while, you know, you guys are making small talk. See where he is on the depth chart. But so I want to ask you, can I get a prediction of how many national titles Purdue will win this year in basketball?
we're expecting optimism, clearly. So that's right.
So,
did we frame the question wrong?
I think they're going to win both the NCAA and the NIT.
That's a rare double dip. It's like winning both showcases on the price. It doesn't happen often.
The only team that ever did it happened back in the 50s, and they're no longer Division I, and because of a massive gambling scandal.
Right. So, no, are you feeling good? How many wins do you see for this team?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. I think they're going to win at least 10 or 11. They should win 10 or 11 of their non-conference games pretty easily. Yep. You know, and that's, you know, not even being overly optimistic. It's a decent schedule, but the only team that I think it would be a stretch of them beating in the non-conference would be Oklahoma State, just because that's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
And then it helps in the Big Ten that you play the projected bottom four teams each twice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, say you go 7-1 there and you've already banked 10 or 11 wins. I think 20-21 wins is not beyond the realm of possibility, and return to the NCAA tournament. And the key to me is I'm really proud of the streak that once Purdue does get to the tournament, they've won a game in each of their last 14 appearances. So
that's pretty big deal.
get there, so, win a game, and I think you can call that a pretty good year for as young as they are and as many changes they had.
That's a sober, level-headed prediction. I don't like it one bit. That is not why we have you on.
Well, it's fatherhood. Yeah, you know, he's suddenly grounded and all realistic and feeling mortal it does it. Everyone eventually falls. Yeah. Everyone eventually comes back down to earth. Gosh. So, but Newbert, just so you know, Brian Newbert of GBI was our guest earlier on the Handsome Hour, and he went as bullish as 24 wins.
Wow.
He was feeling there's someone
I think that's possible, but you gotta have a lot break right, and I can't say that I'm happy with Hammond's already needing a little discipline here.
He's closer to it than any of us are, right? And he did say to us, hey, I can't really talk about rumors and specific, you know, because he can't. I mean, he can't get into that. And I'm sure he knows more than we do. And it's the way he framed it sounded like he said, I don't think you should expect this to be a problem going forward.
Yeah, okay.
He said, you know, don't. And who knows, though? I mean, but I think he alluded to Kelsey Barlow and the point that Barlow wasn't just – this wasn't a one-time thing with Barlow. He kept doing stupid things. Mm-hmm. You know, he continued to do stupid things incessantly. And it just sounded to me like he doesn't think Hammonds is that kind of guy at all, that he's a good kid and that he's not going to be stupid about things. And as I wrote on our site, you know, the next 6 months is worth, you know, what, how many millions of dollars?
Right.
Really. I mean, just don't be an idiot and you should be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a funny thing. I had a conversation tonight with a big Purdue fan. I go to church with a guy, and we played pickup basketball together tonight. And he played basketball at Anderson. He's 6'6", so he's a legit basketball build, and he's a great Purdue fan. And we're talking about Hammonds and Travis, maybe you hear this on your site in the comment section, but we hear it too. People say, I don't get it. Why is everybody talking about NBA with this guy? And I'm like, are you guys stupid or blind or what? Because
you can't be 7 foot tall.
You can't be seven foot tall. But on top of that, man, the guy's got great hands. He's got great feet. He runs the length of the court. He's got amazing timing for shot blocking. He can, and by the way, these are things that he's done versus really good competition. You know, like his best game ever was against the guy who's going to start in the NBA this year.
Right.
So I think that has to be taken into account. You know, the guy is very skilled. But do you hear that on your site? Do people comment that ever?
No, I think a lot of it just comes from he's got all the physical tools. He's just got to have the mental tools and the mental makeup. And I know you guys mentioned Kelsey Barlow there and everything. It really is kind of similar because Barlow, when he had it, I mean, he could be the most dominant player on the court.
Sure, sure.
He just didn't – it didn't click for him mentally, and I don't understand how that can happen sometimes. And I really feel like if Hammonds is indeed a lottery pick, as some are saying, he's going to have to play like it, and Purdue is going to have to reap the benefits, because if he's going to be a lottery pick, then he's going to have to pull Purdue to an unexpected Big Ten title – or a Final Four or something this year, because the draft is going to be so loaded.
It has to be a Final Eight. That's the thing. If he's picked that high, the end of the season has to be dramatic and has to be noteworthy, I think.
Yeah, he's going to have to – because right now he's not even getting any consideration for the All-America teams or anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, you figure if the 15 guys in the – on the first three All-American teams are the ones that are all going to go pro and be the lottery pick.
All those guys are on Kentucky's team. So.
Right. So he's going to have to do something memorable, and that means just playing out of his mind and laying waste to the Big Ten. Can he do it? Yeah. You know, I feel like if he is going to leave for the Big Ten or for the NBA after this year, then I'm all for it, because it meant he went crazy and led Purdue to something special.
Agreed. My perspective on this change, and this is something I think when you're young, maybe you just don't understand how much a dollar's worth. Because I think my parents, what they did is they bought everything for me, because I'm just, you know, I come from a very, very, very wealthy family. None of that's true. None of that's true, by the way. Okay, but anyway, for some reason, though, I was very naive and stupid with money, because I used to think when guys had the opportunity to go in the NBA when, you know, they were young, you know, they were freshmen, sophomore, whatever, I was like, oh, he shouldn't go. He shouldn't go. He should get his education. I don't know what the hell was wrong with me. And I this is like when I was 19, probably 18, 19. And then I started saying, well, you could always go back for school later after you've made a bazillion dollars, you know. And, gosh, if Hammonds has the opportunity, if any Purdue player has a legitimate opportunity to get guaranteed money, big money, go, you know, because it means you've done something at Purdue that's noteworthy, and we've gotten to enjoy it. That's, I think that's the way you have to look at it as a fan. The thing is, that, you know, most of the guys that are legit NBA prospects at Purdue are developmental projects is actually a good word there. And, you know, there's been a path to get there. So.
And the other thing is how many times in these NBA drafts do they look at guys, and if you don't get drafted after your first year or two, then they're like, well, obviously you weren't good enough to make it out right. Those first 2 years. Right. So, you know, after, if you go after your third or even stay 4 years, they're like, okay. Yeah. You know, you've got somebody else better. You obviously weren't good enough. So, I mean, look at JJ.
Yeah.
You look at, you know, you guys were mentioning earlier about you can't teach 7 feet tall. I was just talking to a guy in my office about you know, that whole topic, about guys who are seven-footers, and you can be a stiff and make money in the NBA as a seven-footer. And I had remembered, I was reading, of all places, Karin Driver had a stat about seven-footers, because they did a thing a few months ago where, remember, you know that Buick LaCrosse commercial where Shaq folds himself up and gets in it and then talks about how roomy it is, even though it looks like his knees are wrapping around the steering wheel? They got a look-alike, a stand-in for Shaq, literally a seven-foot-two guy who – They said, we're going to actually put him in a lacrosse and see if he fits in it. And he did, you know, as comfortably as he could. And they said, you know, seat all the way back. He said it was pretty comfortable. Well, anyway, the point is they put a little aside about this. This will blow your mind. The population of seven-footers is infinitesimal, it says. In 2011, Sports Illustrated estimated that there are fewer than 70 men between the ages of 20 and 40 in the United States who stand 7 feet tall.
Oh, my gosh.
And then a shocking 17% of them play in the NBA.
Oh my,
so if you're seven, 70 men between 20 and 40 are 7 feet tall. That's astonishing to me.
Yeah.
Astonishing. And it's not that I thought that there was like thousands of 7 footers, but you would have said 300.
Gosh, yeah. Gosh.
70 men are basically the age that could play professional basketball, and 17% of them do. So
that's crazy. That's a good stat. So that, we got it once again. Tip of the cat to our stat guy. He's everywhere. He's so good.
Oh, he's everywhere.
Freaking on his game. Well done, stat guy. Oh, that's good. Well, that's good stuff. Well, Travis, we appreciate you coming on, and we're gonna do this again. The Handsome Hour is more like a every other week type thing when the season's rolling. When Purdue's in their normal football rhythm of game by game by game by game by. We have it less frequently because there's not as much to talk about. Goodness. What a ridiculous schedule. What a ridiculous schedule. For years, Purdue would have the damn bye game the first game of the year every year, so you're chomping at the bit to watch your Boilers play. Nope, no Purdue football. And now, this year, we actually get a normal and nice bye in the middle of the season, and you get two of them in 3 weeks.
Well, they got away from the challenge of you know, October used to be a killer month. This year they only lost two games in October, so I think that's pretty impressive, actually. It's a step in the right direction.
I think the reason we never used to have a bye is because Notre Dame did the whole, well, if we're going to be on your schedule, you're going to have to play us during your Big Ten bye week. So there it went.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of you guys have probably heard about the rumor that Notre Dame and Purdue will play in Indianapolis, and in, was it next year? Is that right?
Yeah, I've heard that, and it would be in Indy next year, and then in 2015 it would be in South Bend to kind of reset it, so Purdue could always have the seven home games as opposed to the six home games when they only have four Big Ten home games, and then eight when they would have five Big Ten home games.
I'd be completely fine with that. I think that Indianapolis thing would be pretty cool. And you know what I see, honestly, because I'm stupid and I like history, and I always try to make parallels that aren't there and connect dots that really don't connect. But what I see is the advent of a great quarterback and a defeat of Notre Dame in Indianapolis, a la Jim Everett,
1984, to open RCA Dome.
Yeah, it's one of my – I mean, it's one of my earliest vivid memories as a Purdue fan. I was in that game, and it was awesome. My grandfather, who's a Notre Dame alum, he and I sat together in one section, and my brother and my dad and mom sat in another section. We were in the end zone, my grandpa and I were, and my brother and my mom and dad were – and I could see him on the corner, okay? We were a good ways away, but the reason I could see my brother, okay – let's see, 84, he would have been 13 years old, okay? My brother was 13, and I was 9. And I could see my parents because my brother would sprint up and down the aisles every time Purdue would score. And I was like, this is awesome. Both of you guys, I mean, Travis has met my older brother, but he's a pretty reserved guy. And even then, he was a reserved kid, you know, he was a reserved young kid. But it was such a fun day. And, man, I tell you what, if I could relive that type of thing and have little Boiler down along with me and something like that would be a first big memory. I mean, he's 8 years old, pretty similar. Boy, that'd be awesome. And I'll take that any day. I'd love to see him play in the Lucas Oil Field. So that'll be cool.
Well, you can still see him this year. All they have to do is win out. Ohio State would have to lose 2 more games, and Wisconsin would have to lose 3 times to the likes of Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota, or Penn State.
Right?
That's all that has to happen.
I mean, we have to ask Indiana to actually win on the road at Wisconsin and Ohio State when
– Oh, no, Travis. I don't think Indiana plays on the road this season, do they? Don't they play all their games at home this year?
That's right. 12 home games. All prime time.
Here's what I love as a quick aside. I loved the IU fans that were going crazy over them hanging 73 points on Indiana State. Like it was this fantastic accomplishment. And then when they finally beat Penn State, you know, a crippled Penn State team that probably Warren Central High School could beat on a good week.
That was shocking, though. That you weren't shocked by that game. I'm still shocked by that.
I'm very surprised by that game, but to go to a bowl game, Indiana has to win their last 3 games at home because they're not winning at Wisconsin or Ohio State. And
to beat Minnesota. That's all but impossible right now.
And Minnesota runs the ball, and Indiana still can't stop the run. Right? They cannot do it. I would love for them to be 5-6 coming into the Purdue game. And even if Purdue's 1-10, and we just find a way to win and be like, you couldn't even beat us when we were historically bad, and you had your totally awesome coach hanging 70 points on an FCS team.
Well, how about this question? Is there the IU fans? I think that they don't have really any care. They really don't care. Even the ones that are real. I ate lunch with a kid who's an IU student. He was in my church. He's a really good guy, and we ate lunch together at Jimmy John's. I said, "So what's the story with that football team?" And he said, "Oh my gosh," because this is not the way the season's supposed to be going. He said now, and he mentioned Minnesota specifically. He said, "And now Minnesota's playing well." He goes, "Man, they're in deep trouble." I said, "You're right, they are." So my thought is, if they don't go to a bowl game this year, when everybody thought they'd go to a bowl game, is there anybody talking about maybe he's on a short leash for next year?
I don't think so. His offense is great. I mean, it's a fantastic offense. They just can't stop anybody defensively. If anything, they're bad even for an Indiana defense.
Right. Hey, by the way, just speaking of Indiana State, we're going to go back just a little bit because I knew this was the case, but after Purdue squeaked one out at home versus a Indiana State team that was shorthanded, they didn't have their starting running back. The next game they went just crushed a team or probably a person named Quincy. I assume that's just one man in a football uniform. And Indiana State beat the guy 70-7. Okay, so you're like, wow, this Indiana State team's pretty good, right? Because they, you know, pretty good team. So the next game, they went, they lost a nail biter, 38-37. And the game after that, they lost Youngstown State, which is a historically great program, just 35-24. Okay. Then it starts falling off. South Dakota is not a great team; they lost by 3. Then the Illinois State, Brock Spack's teams, of course, right? He was mad, by the way, right?
And you don't mess with the Fighting Spacks. You just don't do it.
You don't do it. And you know why? Brock Spack remembered them almost beating Purdue. That's my guess. You know, he was pissed off that they almost beat Purdue. Okay? And so he laid the wood to them. 55-14, Indiana State lost.
Wow.
But the next week they followed that one up because they were motivated. So they went to North Dakota State, which is that's a good team, by the way. It's a good lower division team.
They won the last two national titles in that division.
Right, right. But, you know, Indiana State was motivated. That's my point. I'm setting this up, okay? Gosh darn it, okay? I'm setting up. They're motivated. They're ready to go. They're like, okay, we're getting that bad taste out of our mouth, right? And they lost 56-10. So here's the question is, how bad would North Dakota State beat Purdue right now? How bad would Illinois State beat Purdue right now? Am I going too far with that? Is that too much?
I think so. Purdue would beat Illinois State. I don't think that they would beat North Dakota State.
Oh, I hate even thinking that, and I absolutely thought that when
but
I saw that.
North Dakota State has – I think that they've won something ridiculous like four straight games over FBS teams, including they beat Kansas State this year, who played in the Fiesta Bowl last year.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, they are a damn good FCS team. I mean, I would say that they are good enough that they would at least threaten the top 25 if they were at the FBS level.
But it just doesn't compute to me that one of those teams can beat a Division I team consistently, because you're like, look at these guys on their roster. I know they've got a couple that will be pros. I'm sure they have a couple that'll be pros, but they just on paper, you're like, how the hell does that happen? Right? If you looked at a recruiting battle, okay, let's pretend for a second. By the way, and it's not much better than this. Let's be honest. But let's pretend that it's North Dakota State versus Purdue for a recruit. Purdue's going to win every single time, right? I mean, without even blinking an eye, right?
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
North Dakota State?
I think so.
No, I don't know.
North Dakota State's only lost twice in the last 3 years, one of them to Indiana State last year.
That doesn't matter. I'm just saying that this is lower divisional. They're not getting recruits like a Division I team, specifically like a Big Ten team. They are not getting that.
True.
Okay, so their coach is clearly a genius. I mean, seriously, you know, great coach. But man, that pains me to think that. I think they would bloody Purdue's nose right now. I don't think they just beat them. I think they beat them by a couple touchdowns. So.
They have beaten Kansas State, Colorado State, Kansas, and Minnesota each of the last 4 years.
So was that a Jerry Kill Minnesota team? No, right?
I don't think so. I know they beat Minnesota twice, technically, too.
Right, right. So the Kansas State one is the toughest one. I mean,
that was their biggest one. That was impressive.
So, but anyway, it does not compute. I don't get it. I know good coaches and good systems can make a difference, but I'm just like, every position you should have that team beaten. You know, but we saw this versus Indiana State this year. In the third and fourth quarter, they turned it up a gear, and Purdue didn't have any answer, and they just started controlling Purdue.
That's the first moment I knew we were in trouble. I kind of dismissed the Cincinnati game, and okay, Cincinnati's a good team. We played them on the road, and it got out of hand.
Right.
But when we couldn't get a single yard on multiple plays. Against Indiana State. I mean, yeah, you were there. You had those two first and goal at the ones, and we managed 3 points.
Oh man.
When you that can't was a bad get spot. A yard against a team that had given up 73 points the week before.
Mm-hmm.
That was the worst part.
Yep.
Oh, my God. And that's when I knew. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's all going to go away this weekend.
That's right.
It's Purdue Harbor too.
That's right. We're gonna close the loop the way we started it right there. We talk about this is like a really good movie. You bring them down. You say there's no hope to be found here, guys. We're in despair. Things are this bad. Look, they could get beaten by a grade school team, girls grade school powder puff team, but they're going to beat Ohio State. Alas.
Would this be
black wait,
okay? So going
power.
In, going
Can
into
I say
the Notre
that?
Dame,
does that sound racist? Black
no,
helmet power.
Black, I don't think so.
Black.
Okay, I'm okay there. Okay, good.
Is your fist in the
yes.
air?
Yes.
So when going into the Notre Dame week, we said on the podcast, we said, would this be the biggest upset of Notre Dame ever? And I think you said it would be the most surprising, because remember how terrible they had looked. So terrible. And you said, and then they almost did it, and. And so I think this would be bigger.
This would be bigger. The how many times has Purdue been what? Travis, you're a degenerate, right? You how? Purdue, the spread for this weekend is what 30?
31.
See, I knew Travis would have had – he has some sweet action on his game.
Exactly. He's parlaying
getting rid of his son's college tuition.
If you want some easy money, Minnesota is a 10-point underdog at Indiana in football.
That's awesome. That's sweet action. I'm going to get all over that. I'm going to call my guy right now.
I don't bet on these games, and I'm considering, like, man, I would double my money on that.
That's like stealing.
That is stealing.
That's ridiculous.
Huh. You're getting 10? They're going to win that game.
I know.
That's awesome.
That is amazing. But that goes to the point I've made to people when they get too much into the, oh, they're not 10 points worse. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got to do with how much action is out there and who people are betting on. It'll move because people bet a certain way. So, you know, they're trying to get you to bet on Minnesota, I guess.
Usually,
right? It just means there's not
Vegas
any action.
Is smart. I'm not trying to be sarcastic even a little bit. Usually, Vegas, those lines are so darn close. I cannot believe that is a smart line at all.
I hear Jay getting in his car driving for Atlantic City right now.
Travis, I'm sure you, back when you were not affiliated with the network, I'm sure you had gambling sites coming to you trying to get you to advertise with them, correct?
Oh, yeah, and I took them up on it. Okay.
Well, we made a policy. We said we will not advertise for those sites. Okay, and no big deal. It's, you know, I don't see it as horrible, but I'm like, I just don't want that on here. Okay, so we just never did it. So now, you know, we're turning into a freaking gambling site. Our podcast right now has become, you know, that grimy, filthy Saturday morning show that I always feel. I seriously, you guys know those shows? They just make me.
Yeah. They sit there and
very dirty. Gosh.
Yeah. Well, so you were starting to say we got way off. You were starting to say you were asking what the spread was for this game, and what were you going to ask Travis? Has it ever been this bad of a spread?
No, I was going to say that I think that this would be absolutely the biggest upset I think I can remember as a Purdue fan. I think this would be historical in the point where a team that's a 30-point home dog.
Phew, gosh, that's horrendous. Ridiculous. What would they be? What would they be in Columbus? 40? I guess they probably would be, right? 35?
Sure.
I mean,
I think they'd be at least 42 in Columbus.
Yeah.
I honestly think that 31 is generous, and that is Vegas probably being like, okay, you know, they have played them close.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's bet on, get some money on Purdue, because everyone's going to bet Ohio State. Who bets it? Because a lot of people like Ohio State, too. That's the other thing. You get a lot of dopes who are just going to bet on them because they love the Buckeyes. So.
Well,
and the amazing thing is Ohio State could have a bad day and win 28-0 and you'd still win money by betting on Purdue there.
Right. Right. Oh, you mean like the way Nebraska didn't do anything special at all when they played Purdue? They just kept running the ball down their throats?
And waiting for us to not do anything offensively, but there's that.
Well, I mean, how many points do you need? Michigan State showed you don't need a lot. I mean, I do think that there's a chance at some point. I do think it's more likely after this game, but where Etling starts to look a little bit, you know, more like what he's capable of looking like. I do think that'll happen this season. I do. I asked Neubert if they'll win another game this year, and he said he certainly wouldn't count them out, because they do have this brutal first whatever it is 8-9 games. I really do think that's my bold prediction. I really do think they're going to win at least one more game. It's hard to lose all of your games, and that's effectively what they'd be doing. I mean, I know they have one, but it's very hard.
They'll beat Illinois at home.
Well, all right.
That's
there
the
you
one
go.
That we were. That's what we said. You know, Jay and I were texting each other this weekend, and that was my prediction. But he said, "Are you kidding me?" Why would you?
I said, I think they'll still beat. I don't know. I mean, I was in a downer mood. I think they'll beat somebody, but I don't think you can look at anyone and say, yeah, Purdue's better than that right now.
That's a really bad team. That's Illinois' very bad.
They've lost 17 straight Big Ten games.
Well, that's right. They still haven't won a Big Ten game.
Pretty great.
They haven't won a Big Ten game in over 2 years. And they've gotten to play Purdue and Indiana twice each in that time, I think.
So if they win, if they leave the Big Ten schedule with one win, he'll be canned, right? That's it for him.
I would assume so.
Got to be, because they've made so many.
Only two seasons.
Doesn't matter. They've been, I mean, because they'll again be without a bull. And
they even started well this year. They had that big win over Cincinnati.
Right, right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
They started like 3-1.
They were 3-1 in the non-conference, and their one loss was to Washington, who's not terrible, and they played him close.
Yep.
Right. Yep. Right. So you figure, yeah, you're right. So then the expectation is, okay, you can win 2 or 3 Big Ten games.
Right.
That's not, I mean, yeah. Thanks for joining us on the Illinois Power Hour.
Brought to you by gambling sites.
Lay down your rent money with
us.
Guaranteed to pick a winner. Yeah, and we were doing that too. We were saying, that's easy money.
Pick Minnesota.
Do not. I repeat, do not take any of this as a recommendation of gambling.
No.
Please. Oh, heck yes. I'm going to say it. Take it as a recommendation. Put your money, put the house on Minnesota.
Great. Great. Real great. Everybody listens to this podcast and believes everything we say. Everybody.
Absolutely.
Everybody.
Except the Boiler football.
No, they don't, because they don't recognize us as a lot.
Are you blocked by them, Travis?
I don't know. He's not blocked.
I don't think so. I don't know.
No. He's in good graces. Tom Schott in here. They do. They take.
They play racquetball on the weekends.
They do. They take romantic jaunts up to the hills. And it's better now. Things are better. They were not good a couple years ago. But
the things he does for his readers, exactly. I mean, you don't even want to know, folks. You really don't.
No, I am not able to do that yet and say that I'm okay with Tom Schott. So I'm not able to. Travis is a bigger man than me. It's okay. So, well, Travis, thanks for coming on. We'll have you on again in a fortnight or something. It'll be a couple weeks. So after Purdue beats Ohio State, I'll tell you this much. Here, I'll make you a deal right now. Right.
You can come gloat.
Exactly. If they win this, we'll have an unscheduled Handsome Hour next week, and you'll be on. You'll be our first guest. Deal?
That sounds good to me. I'll even take my camera to watch you streaking across the field in joy on Saturday.
Right. Whee! Again, I do that all the time.
Again, exactly.
Did after the Indiana State win.
You figured how many chances will there be, really. And that one felt like
bitter about that still, because I got arrested. I thought that was an art exhibit, really.
Accept it. Exactly. And yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I still got a lawsuit against the Purdue Police Department, so I'm going to win that. So.
Oh, I'm so glad we've kept this show nice and tight. I won't have any editing to do. It'll be really
easy. Yep. Yeah. So. All right, Travis. Well, thanks for coming.
All right, Travis.
We'll have you on again. As
all
always.
Right. Delicious. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
You're back. All right.
Bye. Well, that was good. That was a little too tempered, but it was good. I'm glad he came on, but it was way too tempered.
Yeah.
Way too tempered.
I know. Like I said, I think he's growing up a little bit.
Nice.
So that's good for him. All right. Well, I think we've done enough damage for one evening.
I think we have too. We have to mention our sponsor, of course. And I, you know, I said this before. The handsome the hammered T-shirts, they work for football and basketball the same way. The great results that you've seen this year in your Get Hammered T-shirt from Boiled Sports, you can see the same results in Mackey Arena this winter.
Or better, or even
better if that's possible.
It works better. It works better in an arena because it's short sleeves.
Right, exactly. It's like a tropical vacation going to Mackey Arena in the middle of January.
And girls, they're very soft. You might want to sleep in them.
Yes,
they're
nighty type shirt, a night shirt.
That's right. That's how you wear it.
That's exactly. I don't wear anything.
Just the shirt.
Yeah. So, exactly. I get a smaller one, so lower down gets an eyeful. So once again, the show is brought to you by the Boiled Sports Get Hammered T-shirts. What was that? What's the tagline for the shirts?
Come to our house.
No. I had a tagline for the shirt.
Oh, if you don't have a Get Hammered shirt,
you suck. Exactly. That's right. There you go.
I thought you were asking what was on the shirt, and I was laughing hard because you should.
Since I designed, yeah. So, yeah. No, but so go get one of those shirts. It's in the margin still, and all the nuts and bolts, and order one. Get one for your family, or Christmas is coming now. Every store, every freaking store you go to now has Christmas ornaments and crap up. It's not even Halloween yet. Give me a break, marketing people. Give me a break. I mean, I like Christmas a lot. I think it's a great time of year, but I actually care about it for the right reasons, I get to see Jay's Christmas card and what slutty Santa outfit he wears. Will this make it to the show, Jay?
Probably. Okay. I'm basically just going to post it. I'm not even edit it?
Okay. Well, all right. Well, good. Right. Well, everybody, you've been listening to the Boiled Sports Podcast, The Handsome Hour.
BS all the time. Thanks for joining us.